Happy New Year and a welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St Albans and from further afield. Now, later on in the show, we're going to hear how bumblebee flight paths could help make robots more efficient. But first, Transition St Albans have been working for a number of years on practical projects to move St Albans towards a low-carbon and sustainable future. You'll remember open food gardens, food smiles, the thermal imaging camera, Transition Street, Sustainable St Albans Week. These are all great projects that started life with Transition St Albans. But what are their plans for 2018? Catherine Ross from Transition St Albans Steering Group joined me to explain. Catherine, thank you very much indeed for joining me now. You've got big plans for Transition St Albans for 2018, and let's start with changing your name. What will you be known as, and why have you decided to make the change?
Yeah, so ever since we were founded, we've been called Transition St Albans, but it is a little bit of a confusing name, and we've known that for a long time, because transition means so many different things to different people. It's not obviously an environmental group. So we've taken the decision after consultation with our members to change our name to Sustainable St Albans, because we found our biggest project is Sustainable St Albans Week, and more people know us as Sustainable St Albans. So it's more that our name is now catching up with what people think that we're called.
Okay. And you've also decided to jump through what I understand some really quite complicated hoops necessary to become a charity. Why did you decide to go to all of that bother?
Yeah, it is a bit of a tricky process going through the registration. There were really two main reasons. One of them is that because of our recent success with Sustainable St Albans Week and other projects, we've grown a little bit bigger, and our size really meant that we needed to be put on a slightly more formal basis. But also that when we're fundraising, there are quite a few sources of funding which will only consider registered charities, so this will open more doors for us.
Right, I see. So will there be anything else that changes then?
No, really not. We're very much the same ethos, the same activities, the same commitment to the environment, the same commitment to involving the community. Being a registered charity, there's a few more formalities. So we need to keep a list of members who vote at our AGMs and things like that. But nothing substantive has changed.
OK, well, that's good to know. And all your fantastic projects, will they be continuing?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Very much. So all of our current activities will move over from Transition St Albans into the new registered charity Sustainable St Albans.
OK. Now, Sustainable St Albans Week is coming up in April, but have you got any other initiatives planned for 2018?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of our activities will be continuing on. So, for example, our thermal imaging camera and our open food gardens. We're also hoping in 2018 to launch something called Playing Out, which is regular opportunities for children to play in the street. And we're also really hoping to be able to do something on single-use plastics. There are a lot of local groups that are really interested in that issue at the moment, and it's very much in the news at the moment around single-use plastics. So
yes,
we hope to do something in 2018.
It would be nice, especially with Blue Plant, it would be really nice to see something. Some big moves on that this year, wouldn't it?
It really would.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, now you've got a proper launch on Wednesday the 17th of January, and that's at the Barn at the Horn Pub at 7:30. Tell us what you've got planned.
Yeah, so it's an open meeting. People can come along. Firstly, it's just a chance to thank the people who've supported us for the last few years. There'll be a little bit of formal business where we explain about Sustainable St Albans, about the new name and being a charity. And then there'll be lots of chances for people to talk and connect with each other. And we very much want to make it feel that it's not just about us, that we've built up so many good partnerships in St Albans. There are so many other fabulous groups doing things on the environment. And we want to have a chance for them to come along and tell the audience about what they do.
Okay, and who could they expect to hear from there? Any in particular?
So Refuse the Straw will be there, Friends of the Earth will be there, and who else are the RSPB? I expect that Look St Albans will probably be there. There'll be a whole bunch of different groups represented.
Lots of really interesting things there then. That should be great. Now, it's the time of year when we're kind of looking to do things a little bit different in the coming year. So have you got any ideas? Perhaps give us a taste of a few ways that perhaps we could get involved with Sustainable St Albans, things that might help us with some of our New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, so if you're sitting there sort of thinking you know you want to do more, but what's the right more to do?
Yes.
So a typical British family, the biggest things that they do that impact on the environment are flying, especially on holiday, driving their car and eating meat. So if you're thinking, what could I do? What could my family do? Those would be the three biggest areas. We'd be thinking, well, this year, could we fly a bit less? Could we drive a little bit less? Maybe walk, cycle, catch the bus? And then on meat is, could you cut down the number of meals that you're having in a week that involve meat? In terms of ways you could get involved with us, so there's our thermal imaging camera that you can borrow if you want to find out where the areas of heat loss are from your house and try and make it a little bit warmer for a little bit less money. We also have our open food gardens right the way through the year. So if you're listening to this and you already grow fruit and veg, maybe you could open your garden. Or if it's something you want to do more of, then come along and learn from other people's. Then the big thing that's coming up is Sustainable St Albans Week. So pop that in your diary from the 21st to the 29th of April. And there'll be lots of opportunities that week to get involved in dozens of different ways in terms of things to do with the environment. And probably everyone listening to this programme will be linked to a local school or a church or a community group or a business. And there's still time for those organisations to get involved and run something during Sustainable St Albans Week. We ask them to register by the 15th of January. If people want to know about more on any of those things, then if they get in touch with us via our websites and join our mailing list, then we'll let them know what's going on.
Indeed. And you've got a shiny new website.
Yes, well, we're between at the moment. So the old website, Transition St Albans, or you can find our new website, sustainablestalbans.org.
Brilliant. Jolly good. Well, we hope that the launch goes extremely well and we look forward to hearing about all those wonderful things in 2018. Thank you very much indeed for joining me,
Thank
Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
And I was there talking to Catherine Ross of Transition St Albans, now Sustainable St Albans. There were some great tips there, weren't there, from Catherine about how to make your 2018 a little bit greener. And I'll pop all of those tips and perhaps a few more on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Do take a little look there. Now, bumblebees have been the subject of a fascinating study based at Rothamsted Research, which might help us develop artificial intelligence. I spoke to Dr. Joe Woodgate from Queen Mary University of London and Rothamsted Research to find out how. Joe, thank you very much indeed for joining me. Now, you've looked at the way that bumblebees travelled between flowers. What were you hoping to discover?
Well, so what we're interested in is how bumblebees can develop efficient routes that allow them to visit multiple flowers. So an individual forager might visit as many as hundreds of flowers on a single trip in order to fill up with nectar that it takes back to feed the nest with. So bees, in common with many other animals, face this challenge of finding an efficient route between multiple locations. So we see similar behaviour in birds, bats, primates, and of course humans, where it's referred to as the travelling salesman problem.
Okay. Now, you've mentioned that this is something that a lot of animals have behaviours to cope with, but you chose bumblebees. Now, I've tried to take little photographs of bumblebees, and they are so hard to keep track of. Why did you choose them?
Well, so we are we're very fortunate to have access to something called a harmonic radar at Rothamsted Research, which allows us to keep track of the actual movements of bumblebees as they fly around the landscape. So the reason we focus on bees is that because a foraging bee collects nectar and brings it back to the nest, we can be certain what its motivation is at all times, and we can be certain that there's a really good reason for that bee to want to develop an efficient route. So we can put out artificial feeders in the field, which we fill with, essentially, it's just a mixture of sugar and water, so it's yes. Just like the nectar that they collect from flowers. And we can be certain that the bee has a strong motivation to learn where those feeders are and to develop a nice, efficient way of travelling between them.
OK. And so to track the bees, did you have to fix something onto them?
That's right. So the harmonic radar works by emitting a beam of radio waves. And when it encounters a small piece of electronic equipment that we call a transponder. That transponder absorbs the radio waves and it re-emits some of that energy as a higher frequency. And so we have this this large radar that we place in the field, and it's constantly turning around looking for the reflected signal coming from this transponder. So we can attach the transponder to the back of a single bumblebee forager, and we're able to tell then where that bumblebee is as it flies around the world.
Wow. Okay. Well, that sounds quite complicated. Now, you've said sort of why you chose bumblebees and things. Was there anything that you discovered that surprised you?
Well, so we essentially played a bit of a trick on our bees. And what we did is we set out artificial feeders for them in the field that were arranged in such a way that some of them were quite close to other ones and presented a sort of tempting shortcut. But the trick was that if you follow all of the shortcuts, you end up flying further in the long run than if you'd taken a slightly different route between the feeders. And what we found is, as we'd suspected, that the bees showed a very strong preference for flying to nearby feeders. So they quite often did take these shortcuts, which prevented them from ever coming up with the order of visits to the feeders that a mathematician would say was the optimal possible way of foraging on this array.
Yeah.
But what was really exciting to us is that the bees aren't just sort of stereotyped. They're not just bound to follow a single rule that says you always visit the closest feeder to where you are. They actually showed a great deal of flexibility in trying out different routes and trying out different ways to get between the feeders.
Okay, and as you say, actually, this is quite a difficult mathematical problem, isn't it? So did it surprise you that the bees were so intelligent?
Well, it's very impressive the kinds of things that bees can do. One other thing that happened in this particular situation is because we are able to actually track the movements of the bees, we could see the way their actual flight paths through the world developed. Now, even though bees don't have roads or anything like that that they can follow, and the feeders were arranged in such a way that it's not possible to see one from the next, we found that as they gained experience, they were constantly refining their actual flight paths, and they flew straighter and straighter, so allowing them to shorten their routes. And actually, the improvement that they made through this is greater than the improvement they could make through changing the order in which they visited feeders. So what's really impressive to us is the fact that through abilities like this and through following a few simple rules, bees are able to come up with a solution that is maybe not the optimal mathematical solution, but it's good enough to allow them to forage efficiently,
yes,
even though they can't predict in advance where the flowers are going to be.
Okay, amazing. So will this help you to help us to help bees and other pollinators? Does it have applications there?
Yes, so of course our agricultural practices depend quite heavily on pollination from bees, especially from wild bees. And so we believe that only by understanding the way that bees use the landscape and develop routes like this can we successfully manage land in such a way as to make the most of the natural pollination services that insects like bees provide. So in the long run, I hope it will lead to a greater understanding of the ways that we can manage the land and plant our crops to enable bees to make the most of it, to really find the best ways between crops and maximise the amount of pollination we get.
Oh.
And on the flip side, we hope that it will help with pollination. So people make great efforts to help bees by planting flowering plants. And so what we want to do is ensure that we can really get the maximum benefits and really help the bees to make the most of what we're giving them.
Okay. And rather surprisingly, there's another use for this as well with artificial intelligence. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So I'm involved in a project to try and develop autonomous robots that would have similar kind of navigational abilities to bees. So imagine how useful it would be to have robots that could explore the landscape for themselves and discover the places that are going to be important to them and develop routes between them. And so what we hope is that by understanding the rules that allow bees to do this,
yes,
now bees have really quite simple brains, certainly compared to humans, so they must have rules that allow them to perform these complex behaviours in ways that are very efficient.
Yes.
So what we hope is that it can inspire human engineers to come up with solutions that will actually allow robots to show similar kinds of abilities.
So sort of similar learning rules, I suppose. Is that what would be useful?
That's absolutely right, yes. So the ability to efficiently learn and to act without needing to be constantly trained by a human operator.
And this is because you'd expect a robot to have a similar intelligence to a bee?
Perhaps, yes. Certainly similar in terms of the computational power that it has available to
it.
So, yes, if we can understand the ways that bees can do it, perhaps it will enable us to make robots that show perhaps what you might call intelligent behaviour in understanding their environment.
Brilliant. That is fascinating. Joe, thank you so much for coming and telling us about that.
Thank you.
And I was talking there to Dr. Joe Woodgate from Rothamsted Research and Queen Mary College London. Now, you might like to know that I asked Joe why he didn't use honeybees for his study. And he said that they'd found that the honeybees, they were just a little bit smaller than bumblebees. And so when they stick the tracker on, it's just a little bit harder. But I think they must have got over that because he said that they've got a study planned for this year where they're going to have a look at honeybees and how the information that they get from the waggle dance that they do affects their navigation and the efficiency of the routes that they take. So looking forward to hearing about that. That sounds even more interesting, doesn't it? Now, a group of campaigners that's done a lot of campaigning about bees is St Albans Friends of the Earth, and they've got their monthly meeting coming up on Tuesday. That's Tuesday the 9th, and that's 8 o'clock at the Crown Pub in St Albans on Hatfield Road. Everybody's welcome. They usually sit at the back of the pub. They have a little sign so you know which table to join. And one thing on their agenda is their clean air petition that they launched, you'll remember, back in December, and you still have 2 days to sign it. And you can find information about that on stalbansfoe.org. And remember, you can find all the information from today's show on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website, where you can, of course, listen to our podcast at your leisure. So I'll be back at the usual time next week. Until then, thank you for listening.